Good morning. Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a happy hour Friday. I've never been happier to be here on a Friday than I am today. Good morning to you, Randy. How are you?
What's happening, man? All good over here, Andy Bunker. On fumes. Not a lot of sleep last night, but glad to be in the house. Hopefully, everybody who's listening has been safe. Hopefully, your situation is well and everything like that. But, yeah, man, it was one of them, like, just making sure everything was good. Like, y'all go to bed. I'm going to stay up and just hang out and make sure that, you know, everything is good. And it turned out everything was
good. What were you going to do?
I don't know, Andy, because, you know.
Because I heard you talking about this, and I understand. I understand the role of protector and all, of course.
And everything like that.
Had the pool overflowed, what were you going to do?
I was going to do, I don't know, dog.
Because start bailing it out?
Because the crazy thing was, Buck, like, I took a shower probably about 7:30, and I came back, I put my swimming trunks on. And so my wife, Donna's like, why do you have swimming trunks on? I said, I don't know. But if this damn pool overflows, I got to figure something
out. It felt like the right thing to do.
It just felt like the right thing to do. Because, like, when I got home, I saw the level, and it was above where the level where usually it's supposed to be, where the pool lot guy likes it. And then so as the night kept going, it kept getting higher and higher. It was the highest it's ever been since we bought the house. And so I'm just, like, just pacing and everything, and so, I mean, that's why. I don't know what I was going to do.
But you were going to do something.
I was going to do something.
Yeah, of course.
I was going to figure something out.
You just wanted to be ready.
Yes.
You didn't want to have to get ready.
Yes.
You had to stay ready.
I was going
to
say, then we got the new drainage system put in this past spring, and so I wanted to make sure that was working, because it's the most rain it's ever had to, and it was fine. But, yeah, I don't know what I was going to do, dog. I don't know. Maybe I was going to start bucketing some stuff.
I know. I've been
no clue.
I've been there in the same situation where it's like, all right, I'm not going to sleep. It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Okay. I think I probably would wake up if the tree fell anyway, but at least I'd be up there. Maybe I'd catch it. I don't know. Probably can't, but maybe I'd push it off the house or move it away. Yeah, I don't know what I would do. Again, like you said, echo the sentiment. Hopefully, wherever you're listening to us from today, things are all right. I know that there's a lot of water, a lot of different places. If you live in a low area that's near a creek, there's a pretty good chance you're underwater. So hopefully, either you got out of there early or you're able to figure it out. I know there's not a lot of people out there today.
Yeah, man.
So if you're listening to us, there's a pretty good chance you're at home, or you're one of the many folks that listens to us that doesn't get an option. You're out there driving around because you're helping people, whether you're delivering something or you're a part of the crew that's helping people today, whatever. We do appreciate you having us with you. I'll just say this, if I could write a Yelp review on the experience, and this has nothing to do with the hotel was perfectly fine. If you get the opportunity to spend one rainy night in a one-bed or one-room hotel with a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old and a dog, pass.
Yep.
Don't do it. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. It's not good. That dog did not want to be there, Randy. He really, really wanted to leave. And I don't blame him.
I don't blame him.
He's not used to being confined in a tiny little space like that. No one's ever had to pee more times than him. And then when, you know, you take a dog to pee in weather like that, you get wet.
Yes.
So that was fun. That was fun. It was a good night. It was a good bonding experience for all of us. I think Jack probably ate a lot of dog food. So he'll be his bones will be strong. The little guy kept sneaking away, man. He kept sneaking away. And Lily's throwing dog food on the ground. She said she wanted to feed Boone like a bird. I don't know. It was totally. At one point, I said, stop putting dog food in the air conditioner because they're dropping it down the holes in the air conditioner in the hotel room. Yeah, I don't know. We're probably going to have to pay some sort of cleaning fee on that room that we had. But anyway, it was nice. Everyone's safe. We're happy to be here. Huge weekend ahead.
Yeah, buddy.
Huge weekend ahead.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about this weekend. It's funny. My brother-in-law just texted me because he's a big Alabama fan. They out in L.A. So I'm like, what the hell are you doing up early? He's like, man, I just can't stop thinking about this game this weekend. And so, yeah, obviously that's going to be a big game down there in Tuscaloosa. And like I said, we'll talk right in a little bit. And then the Falcons, it's rivalry week here in Atlanta as the New Orleans Saints come into town to take on the Falcons, which, you know, it seemed like all the guys we talked about yesterday as far as on the Saints side look like they're probably all going to play more than likely this weekend. I know they said Kamar was limited, so but I'm sure they're going to get played. And then, you know, where are the Falcons at a week more as far as trying to figure out what they want to do? Kirk Cousins getting better and better. So, I mean, my thing, my takeaway from this is if they lose, which I don't think they will, is like I'm not going to, because I keep hearing this about the Falcons. Yeah, they're one in whatever, but they're pretty good. No, we're going to go back to what your record is. You're a 1-3 football team, you know, and so you still got a long way to go. And for some reason this season to me, look at it after only 3 weeks or whatever, it don't seem like if you're 1-3 that the season's over.
No. You know what I mean? I do know what you mean.
Yeah, it just don't feel like it. And I'm talking about league-wide. Not talking about the Falcons. I'm talking about league-wide. Like, the Bengals are 0-3. I don't think the Bengals are out of it
I do know
Baltimore,
what you mean.
You know, I just don't feel that.
And I think that's an interesting observation. I've had it myself also. I think there's reasons for that. I think there's a lot of teams right there, right? Yeah. I think when this weekend is over, so much of the league is going to be 2-2. 1-3 is not that different. Now, it's going to feel different if you're 2-2 than it is if you're 1-3. I'll say that. A lot of that positivity that you've been hearing and I've been hearing and we've been seeing from Falcons fans, even at 1-2, and finding the silver lining or the positive, or saying, okay, that looked better, this looks better, it feels like things are going in the right direction, you're not going to hear any of that on Monday morning if they lose to the Saints. Like, that benefit of the doubt of, well, it's hard to beat Patrick Mahomes, and week one, everyone was whatever. Like, first of all, I've never heard this level of benefit of the doubt from Falcons fans ever. Like, this has been...
Ever.
And I get it, because I've seen it too, and they do look like they're a pretty good football team. Mm-hmm. But if they lose to the Saints on Sunday, all that's gone.
Yeah.
Everything's gone from the benefit of the doubt standpoint of, oh, I can see this and I see that. And well, at a certain point, and I would say this weekend, all that, I can see signs of it. They can't be signs anymore.
No.
They have to actually be plays. You have to actually be successful. You can't be 2-for-9 on third down. How about have more than 9 third downs?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing about it. The 2-for-9 every single week and the 6-for-27 on third down that the Falcons are so far this season, third worst in the NFL percentage, by far the worst in the NFL in terms of actual third down conversions. Nobody has less than six.
Six.
They only have six in three games.
Like,
because they only have 27 third downs because their drives are short,
yes,
or they only have so many drives. Like, they haven't had the ball very much in a lot of these games, especially week one and week three. So that's going to be a part of it. But yeah, I mean, all of the, again, I don't know entirely where it comes from. I'm surprised to see it. I guess I'm happy to see it. People are kind of riding with these guys longer than normal. But that riding with these guys is not going to be as easy if they don't win this game on Sunday.
I agree.
You can't be 0-3 at home.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, they have to possess the ball. They got to get plays in, Buck. I mean, if you look at the time possession throughout the season, they may have left, let's say, 12 drives out there in three games. They got to possess the ball more, and they got to be able to figure out what they want to do on third down and get Kurt comfortable, because he's comfortable early, but keep him comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to give defenses their credit also. They did some things, especially Spags. He started lighting them up and everything like that. But they got to keep him comfortable and keep this offense on schedule. As much as we talk about, especially in the NFL, it's an offense. It's a schedule type thing on offense, unless you got one of them dudes like Pat Mahomes, you can play off schedule. This Falcons offense is a scheduled offense because your quarterback is not going to go above the X's and O's as far as breaking out the pocket and running.
You have a timing quarterback.
Yes.
You have a timing offense.
Yes. Everything has got to be right.
Which means he also has to be on time too, because that's something that you hope works itself out as the season goes on, but it hasn't yet. And just going back and looking at that fourth quarter against Kansas City on Sunday, there was plays to be made.
Yes.
The receivers were on time. The offensive line blocked it out, and Kirk was in the pocket. He just didn't make the throw.
Right.
And whether he was hesitant in making it or he underthrew it or whatever, there was plays to be made that just didn't get made. The third down is interesting because we've been relating it back to first down and second down. Joe Patrick came on yesterday and said they've actually been decent on first down. They actually have. Like, they're right in the middle of the league in terms of what you could expect yardage-wise on first down.
What were they at second down in?
I didn't look at that, man. I don't have this kind of time. I was trapped in a room with a 4-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a dog. You know what I mean?
I know.
Here's the thing, though. The idea would be you're not getting yourself into third and manageable situations, right? It doesn't matter. They're 0-3 on third and short. So they're just
bad on third down.
They're just bad on third down. It doesn't. They're 3-10 on third and medium. So, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's not good enough.
Mm-mm.
They're 0-3 on third and short. They're 3-10 on third and medium, 3-8 on third and long, and 0-6 on third and extra long.
Okay, so this comes down.
Terrible on third down, no matter what the distance.
And this is one of those things where Zach, Z-Rob, or whatever you want to call him, he's got to get in his bag.
Right.
He's got to figure out a play that, you know, if you look at a play caller's play sheet, they have everything, all these funny colors and pretty words and all this other stuff, laminating everything, and there's a box. It says third down, and it's third down boxes, and they have the plays from third and short, third and medium, third and long, and third and real damn long.
Yeah.
He got to get in his box. He might need to switch a play up from maybe the 30 media box and put it in the 30 short or something like that. He's got to figure out a rhythm to keep this team on schedule. But the players got to execute too. The players got to execute the plan and things like that.
You just shouldn't be that bad on third and manageable, meaning anywhere between 1 and 5 yards, right? That's third and manageable mm-hmm. in that distance. When you have a pretty decent offensive line and you have Bijan Robinson.
Yes.
Like, you should be able to pick up those yards, and they haven't been able to do it. And none more obvious than at the end of the game against Kansas City on Sunday, where there was multiple times where they had the ball in third and short, fourth and short, and they tried to get those tough yards, and they couldn't do it. So, I mean, you just have to do it. Yeah. I mean, there's no magic bullet or anything like that anyone's going to come up with. At least we're not. Hopefully they come up with it. But you just have to block better and execute better. Get your block. If you're asked to block Tyler mm-hmm. Allgeier, maybe don't ask guys to do stuff that they're not super good at doing, but right. whatever. If you're asked to do it, you got to do it. That's your job.
You got
to
do it, exactly.
And that's really what it comes down to. I mean, these games are going to be close. This game Sunday is very likely going to be close mm-hmm. against New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a one-score game in the fourth quarter. And if you don't make those plays, you're probably going to lose.
It's simple as that, because that's why they've been losing, because they have not done a little. They've been in all three games. All three games have been a one possession.
If they did what they did on the final drive against the Eagles in all three games, they'd be 3-0.
They'd be 3-0.
If they did what they did on the final drive against the Chiefs in all three games, they'd be 0-3.
Yeah.
I mean, they did it once, they didn't do it twice, they're 1-2.
Yeah, I mean, but they have to, they got to stay on schedule. It had to be something we talk about a lot today, because this is a scheduled quarterback, because he does not do anything spectacular. Yeah.
And to me, it gets back to him.
Yep.
If they're going to stay on schedule, mm-hmm. he's got to be really good.
And the thing about it is, I ain't talking about him moving, but you know what they did in the Philly game? They put on bootlegs. They got to do some more of that stuff. But again, you want to talk about all the plays they want to run, but you got to run plays to be able to run those plays. You got to run plays to be able to get Kyle Pitts more targets, or to get Allgeier more carries, or something like that. You got to be able to run more plays. Because 50-something ain't enough.
No, it's not. It's not. When you get outplayed by 20 plays, you're probably going to lose that game, especially in a one-possession game. It goes a long way. All right, this hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's trending here on a happy hour Friday. Tons going on, obviously. Huge weekend ahead. Roddy Nabalsi from UGASports.com going to join us at 11:40 as well. Thanks for being with us. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, I've definitely got it. I've got it from a lot of fans in town. They made it clear going back to, you know, if I would be out in public in April, May. I mean, they made it clear. They take the S off of the team name, you know. So it's a big deal. And so we want to deliver for our fans. I thought they brought a great environment on Sunday night. It was great energy. And I want to see that continue throughout the season.
Kirk Cousins. You can hear it in his voice.
He's passionate about this, baby.
Talking about the rivalry between the Falcons and the Saints. You know, there's two S's, so Aints.
Yeah.
Or Saint.
Yeah.
I think Aints is probably what he meant.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what it is. It's this matchup between these two teams. The series is tied at this point.
Yeah, I saw that.
Between the two of them.
I saw that. Whoever, 55-55.
Yeah,
like that, right?
Yeah, 55 all. So whoever wins the game on Sunday has the upper hand by one. Also has the upper hand in the division as well, because you don't want to start losing games to these guys, because obviously you got the Saints on Sunday, then you got the Bucks on Thursday, mm-hmm. and then the following weekend you've got the Panthers as well. So you've got three consecutive games against your division. And for all the, you know, whatever it is, well, the rust, guys aren't on the same page, working it out, all the stuff that you would like to have been taken care of before the season started. Hopefully that got taken care of in these first three games.
Yeah.
And it just needs to look better on Sunday against New Orleans. Otherwise, because here's the thing about New Orleans. That offense is explosive. We've seen it. Mm-hmm. That defense is very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
You go out there looking like you looked offensively against Pittsburgh, or have a breakdown or two here defensively, they'll come in here and smack you.
Yes, they will. Like, they will come down. They will come in here and run straight through your neck. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is a fun game. You know, the rivalry, a lot of people from a lot of Saints fans living here in Atlanta. So, I mean, it's going to be a beautiful Sunday, too. So it's going to be fun with tailgating and all that other stuff. But yeah, when it's time to get into that stadium and when that whistle's blown at 107 or whatever time it is, it's all about physicality. You know, and the more physical team's going to win this football game. And we know this. That's what the Saints, especially defensively, their front is physical as hell. Their offensive line, I know they lost their center, but they still want to run the ball, because just like, and a lot like the Falcons, their run game sparks their game, their offense.
Yep.
It does. Derek Carr's one of the best play action pass of his generation. Yeah. This dude gets busy.
There's a lot of similarities in what you're talking about between what they want to do offensively and what the Falcons want to do.
Yeah, but he can do a little bit more because he's a little bit more mobile than Kurt is. But you let him play action pass, they get that run game going, he will bust your head with this new improved offense and Kubiak Jr., who probably, if they continue to play well, will probably get a head coaching job next year.
Could be.
But this is all about physical. It's about being physical up front. Getting that extra steak or sausage or whatever at pregame, getting your weight up, getting some bricks in your pocket because it's going to be just like their game was last week. That's why they had so many dudes on IR. On their injury report to my Saints, because it was a physical-ass football game they played against Philadelphia. And Philadelphia ended up winning that physicality. That's why they had them two big runs. Saquon found a hole, bam, popped them out.
We've talked about it the last couple of weeks. Couldn't really talk about it week one because he hadn't seen the teams play yet. But Bijan needed to outplay Saquon week two, and he did. Mm-hmm. He did. And it was a big part of why the Falcons won that football game. Last week we said the duo of Bijan and Algier needed to outplay the duo. They're backups, but the duo that the Chiefs were throwing out there, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. They flat out didn't. The Chiefs were better on the ground than the Falcons were with an undrafted running back.
You know his name.
Yeah, I know his name. Okay. Carson Steele. He's on the list. He's a Don Lundstrom All-Star.
Yeah.
That's my grandpa, who was a white running back, for people that didn't listen to the end of the show yesterday. It was awesome.
Good.
He was probably one of the best. But anyway, that's not good. You don't want to get beat by outworked by those guys. Now, that has a lot to do with their offensive line, of course. But if Bijan's better than Kamara on Sunday, you probably win this football game.
Damn, that's my number two key in the game.
That's okay. You can still say it. Yeah. Still, it's two hours. It's two All hours right. away.
Yeah.
But that's a big part of it, though.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously, having the ball more, having longer drives, getting Bijan the ball more, mixing the run and the pass correctly, getting the run established, and then being able to play action off of it. I mean, again, I think the reasons that have been given for why certain guys haven't gotten the ball as much or why certain things haven't happened as much are reasonable.
Yeah.
But they also kind of sound like excuses.
I don't think it is one. I think if you have more plays, you're able to give people more opportunities.
You probably would. But
the quarterback can play better.
At the end of the day, no one cares about that stuff.
I understand what you're
like
saying.
Kyle Pitts
cares.
Has two catches.
Yes, and that's,
you know
and
what
that's
I mean?
Bad. But the thing about
it is, there's not enough plays. So what? Make more plays.
And that's what we're saying. They got to run more plays to get more guys opportunities. But even that, Andy, even with the opportunities that they have, you got to take advantage of those.
No doubt.
Yeah, even with the opportunities that you're given,
no
you
doubt
take
about
advantage
it.
Of
no
those.
Doubt about it. But again, when the same things are being said, as have been said year after year after year, which is, boy, it'd be nice to get him worked into this offense. The details of it, they're relevant for the sake of the conversation, but they're not relevant for the end of the game result.
No.
Get him the ball
get
more.
Get him the ball more.
What are we doing?
Get him the ball.
The guy had two catches.
Get him the ball more.
Now, I know you had I understand. There's context to it, and the context in terms of our discussion matters for sure, but you lost the game and he had two catches. That's not good enough. Keep drives going. Get him the ball more.
Get him the ball early, too.
That's maybe get him the ball early. Maybe feed him. You know what I mean?
Feature him.
Yeah.
Feature.
Maybe. I don't know. Been saying it for 4 years, though, and still haven't. Let's hear a little bit of what happened last night on Thursday Night Football.
Deuce Vaughn is now in there. New set of downs to work with. Prescott will throw it. Left side. It's caught by Lamb. Breaking away. Lamb. Goodbye. Touchdown, Cowboys. Lamb is explosive.
What a boring ass game.
Yeah, man.
Oh, my goodness.
What a Thursday Night Football game.
But I tell you, I mean, if something happened to CeeDee, they are blank out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they threw it to him. They tossed him the ball out the backfield.
They,
he was so good yesterday.
They featured him.
They got him the ball anytime they could. Malik Nabers was balling early, but he got the concussion on the sideline. But Daniel Jones, I mean, you get a free play, you underthrow the dude that's wide open, and the ball gets picked off. Now, it was a free play and everything. They could do anything. And I'll give Dallas credit. Boy, Dallas' run defense, they stepped up yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the backfield. They were pushing the line of scrimmage. Now, their biggest issue is they lost their two best defensive players.
Yeah.
Two of the three. They lost both of their edge rushers. Micah Parsons and D-Law went down. And D-Law's didn't look good because he went down with the foot. Obviously, Micah got rolled up. But, yeah.
What happened to Micah Parsons?
Micah was coming over the center, and he was getting pressure, and the pile kind of fell on the back of his
legs. Because they had to cart him off.
Yeah, it fell on the back of his leg. And so that's – I mean, they're in trouble.
I mean, that's that.
If those two dudes are gone, they have no shot.
Goodness.
They have no shot. But they barely won against a sorry-ass Giant team.
Yeah. They did. It was it was just a rough Thursday night. It was a field goal contest. Yeah. That kicker for the Cowboys keeps making long ones.
Dude, he got a boot.
Brandon Aubrey's a monster.
He got a boot.
Another 60-yard field goal.
He
man.
Got a boot.
And with Tucker kind of struggling right now,
yeah,
he's the best kicker in football.
Tuck's missed three kicks already.
That's very unusual. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole season for Justin Tucker.
Yeah.
That's weird. All right, here's Kirby Smart talking about playing big games.
Well, I think the emotions can be good as long as you're not emotional. And when you play in big games, when you come to University of Georgia, you sign up for that. And this is certainly one of those. But there'll be a lot of big games this year the way our schedule sets up.
Yeah, I mean, this is the biggest game because it's right now. But, I mean, you look at down the road, I mean, they got plenty of big games. And most of them are on the road away
chance that they play 1-2 in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
If they win this game and Texas keeps on, then that game technically will be bigger eventually, I guess. But, yeah, this one's the biggest now.
Yeah, man.
And I love that. It's good to have emotions. It's a big game. You're going to feel emotion, but you can't be emotional.
No, you can't.
Can't let it get the best of you.
And that's the thing, you know, and I was, especially when I was younger, like that would happen sometimes. You're just so hyped and so emotional and so ready and so charged up that, one, you get tired after the first damn play because you got all you're putting all your energy and everything. I mean, it's all about it's a pace. But it's not a pace. It's a physical pace where, you know, you got to play 70 snaps. You can't just, you know, after one play, you make a catch on the first play of the game and you hooping and hollering.
Yeah.
And then, hell,
now you're exhausted for 10 minutes.
Exhausted for 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Take the whole damn quarter off, man. But, yeah, this is going to be a hell of a football game, man. And I anticipate it's going to be like late fourth quarter, one possession, maybe the last team that has the ball type football game, man. And you're dealing with two equally matched. You can – like maybe point somewhere where they might have an advantage, point somewhere where Georgia has an advantage. But, I mean, these are two of the premier teams in college football, and it's going to be a situation. We know, we talked about it, Nick, it's going to be a whole love fest all weekend down there with Nick Saban, rightfully so, as it should be.
Rightfully so.
It's going to – have you found out who the guest picker?
No, I haven't heard yet.
Haven't told us yet.
I haven't heard yet.
But, no, it's going to be like that, and Georgia's going to a place –
if you thought the Jason Kelce Monday Night Football broadcast on ESPN was Eagles-centric – just wait for what Saturday is going to be like for Saban.
If they have, what if they play the music and Nick gets up and dance like Jason?
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
I love it.
That'd be
what if he had a velour, like a crimson velour suit on?
That'd be awesome.
With a
necklace. They have to, but I mean, and we're trying to decide because one site says Alabama's favorite, one site says Georgia's favorite, but whatever it is, it's like Alabama don't lose there.
Yes, you know, it's the first time that Alabama at least was installed as an underdog. Yeah. I know that the betting can sway it, but was set as an underdog at home since 2007.
Yeah, Bama don't lose there.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you are Joe Burrow and them and go in there, and obviously
Texas
went in there and won last year, so you can win in there, but you got to be one of those teams.
It happens, but you have to be. Yeah. They were the national champions.
Yes.
Texas was in the playoff.
You got to be one of those.
You have to be one of the four best teams
because
in the country.
You know why? Because Alabama is one of those.
Yeah, but you know what Georgia is?
One of those teams.
One of the four best teams in the country.
Yes,
something about the public loving Alabama so much kind of confirms the way that I was leaning
but
on this one.
I mean,
there is a lot of unknown because the season is so young.
Yes.
And the advantages that you think might be there may not actually be advantages.
But
the thing that has to be an advantage, and I don't know if it is, we'll find out tomorrow night, Georgia has to have an advantage at quarterback. They have to.
Damn, and you're taking all my damn keys.
I don't know if they do, though.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know if they do.
But they got to play.
I think Carson Beck's probably a better pro prospect. That's fine. That doesn't mean he's a better college quarterback.
That's
you know what I mean?
Absolutely correct, man. But it's going to be fun. I cannot wait. Too bad I got to wait all damn day to watch it. But
I can't.
It's going to be a fun.
Hey, luckily we got a little appetizer for you tonight.
Yeah, man. The Canes are playing.
That's right. Yeah. Miami, Virginia Tech. Probably be a better game. Certainly more watchable game. God. Washington Rutgers tonight.
I bet it's a good game.
Oh, I bet it'll be a good game.
I
bet it'll be a close game. I don't think it'll be fun to watch.
What's the line on?
Rutgers favored by 2.5.
Oh, okay.
Get the little home field kick.
Home field.
It's hard to go to Piscataway on a Friday night.
Everybody knows that.
I think it's literally hard to get there, and no one wants to go.
That'd be
the game's going to suck, man.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's going to be packed.
It's going to
be
horrible.
Rocking.
I bet the final score of that game is going to be something like 17-15 or something like that.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be grimy. I don't have any faith in them. I don't think they're very good, but I hope they win. All right, we'll come back. Rodney DeBalsi is going to join us next. We'll get the lowdown from an injury standpoint. As far as Georgia goes, joins us every Friday at 11:40 from UGASports.com. And this hour of the Midday Show is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. MarkSpain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We'll be right back. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Also, just a great bumper we should incorporate into the mix. Like, we should just put this one in the mix and use this one from time to time. 20 minutes away from an NFL no huddle. We'll get into obviously more Falcons and Saints, but just a jam-packed Sunday in the NFL. College football corner at 12:20 as well. Obviously more Georgia and Alabama, but a lot more fun games on Saturday, too, that we'll get you, and some good ones on Friday night as well. Don't sleep on the Friday night games. But this time on Fridays at 11:40, Roddy Nabalsi joins us from UGASports.com. Roddy, how are you?
What up, Rod?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. Little worried. Had to pick that Mystical Danger song, you know. there's some tight bottoms in the Tuscaloosa and Athens, Georgia right now.
What worries you most from a Georgia perspective as you're analyzing this game and you're thinking, all right, I feel good about this, I feel okay about this. This part of the game, this part of the team, whatever it is, what's the thing that you feel like Georgia is going to struggle with most tomorrow night?
Well, I mean, this be obvious is Jalen Milroe, simply because he just provides a thorn in the side of any team he plays. I give Kalen DeBoer credit for realizing that, hey, this isn't the type of quarterback I'm used to using a whole lot, but this guy has the best wheels on the team, so we're going to make use of his talent. So watching how poorly Georgia tackled in that Kentucky game, and watching that, you know, knowing that if you have a spy, this guy is maybe faster than your spy, can get to the edge, it would make me nervous if I'm Glenn Schumann. I'm not sleeping well knowing that I got to contain this guy. And plus, he's, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, he's just a runner. He's a downfield threat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He can chunk the ball and make big plays downfield. He's pretty accurate on the deep ball. So I think Kirby Smart summed it up well, said he's a ticking time bomb on every play.
Yeah, he is. He's absolutely correct, Rod. And I think, you know, with the week, you were hoping to get some guys back if you're Georgia that's been down. Who's up and who's down? Who do you think is going to be up and who's going to be down for this game?
Well, getting Warren Brinson back is going to be huge. That's that guy's played a lot of football for Georgia. You know, that's definitely – you saw Kentucky take advantage of the fact that Georgia was down three defensive linemen, and Xavier McCloud got his first snaps ever in a Georgia Bulldog uniform. So, I mean, he was brand new to the system, if you will. But getting Warren Brinson back would be nice. Jordan Hall, who I've pegged ever since he was a high school senior as maybe Georgia's next big defensive lineman – guys had two surgeries. Getting him back would be nice. But the real question is about Mykael Williams, number 13. He's just such a disruptor. But I don't know if he's going to play that much. I mean, I expect him to dress out. I expect him to be there. I just think he's probably maybe 80%, you know, 70%. So the question comes down, do you put a 80% Mykael Williams on the field or 100% Damon Wilson or Gabe Harris Jr. or somebody else at that spot, just knowing that you know, maybe Mykael's not really going to be that impactful. Now, here's the thing. They could be sandbagging. He goes out there and just kills everybody. But my little birdies at practice says sometimes he's in, sometimes he's not. So,
okay. Yeah, so you're supposed to be the guy that tells us whether or not he's sandbagging. So it sounds like the birdies say maybe he's not.
We know you got the little cameras and them tackling dummies, Roddy.
He's still dealing with it. I mean, it's his knee from that illegal block in the Clemson game, right? Like that's what has him hurt.
Ankle stuff. Ankle he didn't stuff. Do the surgery, so the idea was, you know, he could have the same surgery that, you know, the tightrope surgery, be back. But they thought, well, we don't need him for Tennessee Tech. We don't need him for Kentucky. Then there's the bye week. You go 4 weeks with rest, or you know, surgery, and he'll be out, you know, five to six weeks. So. It wasn't quite so bad that it needed surgery, but they figured maybe the rest would be there. And so, I don't think he's 100% or even close to 100%, but if you put him on the field, and Randy, you know this, when you see that there's an All-American on the field, all of a sudden that tight end gets shifted over and has to chip him.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to account for him. And if you don't account for him at 80%, Mykael Williams will beat you to death. So I could definitely see a situation where they put him on the field just to see how see what check Alabama goes to and try to take advantage of it.
What about with on the offensive line? You probably lost your best lineman up there in Rat. What do they do? Because I forgot who came in during the Kentucky game that I heard, but what do they do right there in the interior? Because they got a lot of young players there, Rob, but they just they're young.
Well, see, they had three really good guards going into the season. You had Tate Radledge, a preseason unanimous All-SEC guy, and then you had Micah Morris, who's just an absolute bulldozer. I mean, he is a people pusher. And then Dylan Fairchild, you know, state championship wrestler, one of the best. So you had three guards for two spots. Mm-hmm. So the one place you could lose an offensive lineman was at guard. So they brought in Micah Morris. You know, he's out there, and Dylan Fairchild, they're both really good. But they're surrounding a freshman center who had two bad snaps in that Kentucky game. So it's not the offensive line that we thought it was going to be when the season started. They're just not quite there yet. They missed some blocks, and they really need to keep Carson Beck protected in this game.
Is it going too far to say that this kind of feels like a referendum game on Carson Beck?
Not so much on Carson Beck, but it is on Kirby Smart. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, Kirby Smart, everyone is pretty much the unanimous best coach in America. Mm-hmm. But if there's one smudge on his CV, on his resume, it's that he's 1-5 against Alabama. And I'm still kind of going back and forth on who I think is going to win this game. And everyone's going to read a lot into it. If Alabama wins, then Alabama is still Alabama. And it doesn't matter that Nick Saban's gone, Kalen DeBoer's got him, and Kirby Smart can't beat him. If Georgia wins, then Kalen DeBoer's not the guy. Kirby's exercised the demon, and it's now Georgia's the number one. And I think that's what we do. We overreact. Right. We even have our post-game show is called the Post-Game Overreaction Show. And we're all going to overreact. But, again, they're going to face each other probably in the SEC Championship and or the playoffs. So this isn't the only time Georgia's going to see him, more than likely. And I think it's way too early to predict what this means for college football going forward. But it is a huge data input into Carson Beck, Kalen DeBoer, Kirby Smart, and the future of Georgia-Alabama recruiting.
Yeah, man. Who does Georgia need to get going offensively? And we talk about the skill position players or running backs.
Well, I mean, I think you need to go Trevor Etienne. You have to be able to run the ball in this game. There's no question in my mind. Well, I mean, that's pretty generic to say that about every game, but – if you can't look at, get into third and three, third and two, if you're sitting there at third and seven, third and eight, you're going to lose this football game. I bet if you and I were to go down the list and look at who had, third and long the most, that's the team that lost and probably lost badly. So I think they definitely need to have a good running game. I think you lean on Trevor Etienne. But I'd like to see the tight end step up because you had some missed bubble screens. You had some missed flares, blocks, on flare routes. Those were plays that Brock Bowers destroyed last year. I mean, he loved to block people. He loved to take them out, and that freed up, a Dominic Lovett. That freed up a Dylan Bell or an Arian Smith on a jet sweep. So I'd like to see those guys step up. And, who replaces Brock Bowers and Ladd McConkey on third and eight, third and seven? You knew that you could see 84 or 19 get the ball and that you converted to the third down. Georgia's about 39% on third down conversions right now. I'd like to see either one of the wide receivers or Trevor Etienne just kind of say, look, I know we're at third and nine, but get me the ball and I'll take care of it. We will have a first and a new set of downs if you get me the ball. And I don't know who that person is right now.
Roddy Nabalsi joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, UGA Sports. Talking Georgia Bama. I know you said you're going back and forth with it and you still have, over a day and some hours to make your decision. But where are you leaning right now as far as how this game goes and who ultimately wins?
All week I was predicting Alabama to win just based on gut feeling and I feel like Georgia needs to show me something that they did not show me the Kentucky game. But Nick Saban is gone. This is it's a new era. Does it start tomorrow? I don't know. But eventually, Kirby is going to do what Kirby does. It was the same with Florida. It took him a while to get, we had to beat Florida. But now, if you're Georgia, you don't worry about Florida. You don't worry about Tennessee. Yeah. You don't worry about Auburn or Tech or anybody like that. So the tide will shift, not to use a pun.
That's a pretty good pun, though.
Pretty good pun, though.
It's okay if that was intentional.
That's pretty good.
But it's like these giant boats. It takes a while to spin them around, and Alabama's a behemoth. But if you're going to start spinning them into a different direction, maybe not quite at the very, very top, and if Georgia has to ascend to be the best, you got to beat the best, and Kirby Smart's going to do it. Yep. Maybe not tomorrow, but when they meet again, I'd put a lot of money on them in the second round if they don't win the first one.
Roddy, we appreciate it. Enjoy the game.
Appreciate it, Rod.
Thanks, guys. Y'all take care.
Riding to Ballsy there, UGASports.com. Interesting to say that he feels like, because I asked him, is it a referendum, whatever, on Beck, and he says it's kind of more on Kirby.
I think it's on both.
I think it's on both. Kirby's going to be the coach for as long as he wants.
Yes.
He's going to coach against Kalen DeBoer a lot of times.
Right.
Unless Kalen DeBoer isn't the guy and he gets fired in a couple of years. But, what happens tomorrow between Kirby and Kalen DeBoer or Georgia and Alabama in general, I don't know. I feel like becomes one part of a bigger story between the two of them, hopefully for a long time. This is Carson Beck's, maybe not last time, like Roddy said, but potentially last time to play Alabama. Only time to play Alabama because he never played him before. Carson Beck, Kirby's great. We know it.
Yeah.
Carson Beck might be great. I don't know. That's why it's a referendum on Carson.
Say it was, 22 million people that watched the Kentucky game, that ragged-ass game Georgia played?
Was it that many?
I think it was somewhere in there.
It was a lot.
What you think about on this side? The whole damn world's going to be watching this one.
Oh, everyone's going to be watching
this game.
Everyone's
going to
be watching
this
game. And also how you perform against NFL caliber players is how you get that jump to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you don't, then that's how the narrative starts as well. Like, Carson Beck obviously is very good. We've seen him be very good. But he hasn't been great this year. I mean, if he's not great on Saturday night, they're probably not going to win this game. And then what is the conversation after that? It's like, well, dang, man. Like, he's all right, but he gives us a chance, you know, maybe make the playoff, but we can't beat elite teams with him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's why, to me, it's more about him than it is about Kirby. You know what Kirby is. Kirby's awesome. He's great. He's, if not the best. No, he's the best coach in America right now.
Yes, he is.
Now, if Kalen DeBoer beats him tomorrow night, then Kalen DeBoer gets to have a little bit more on his resume, too. But, nah, man, it's... Carson Beck has to be great.
Yes, he does.
That's what it is.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Damn sure does.
Kirby's going to be the coach next year.
Yes.
Carson Beck's not going to be the quarterback next year.
But if Carson Beck wants to be the quarterback of the Giants.
Yeah, if he wants to be the Giants quarterback next year, then he's got to play good. Got to play good tomorrow night. Yeah. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about a little bit, maybe briefly, about the Giants quarterback last night because that was the first game of week four. Boy, oh boy.
Hey, for a quarterback, he's on a bargain deal.
Yeah.
A starting quarterback bargain deal.
Yeah. But doesn't the bargain have to have a value? You know what I mean? Just because you bought something for a decent price, if the product sucks, then you know what
it's
I mean?
It's a bargain, man.
It wasn't a bargain then. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an NFL No Huddle to kick off the noon hour. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.